61.
Sherrod turns down the government's job offer. John Boehner, the congressman from Ohio, says to Obama, why don't you fire Timmy Geithner? We suggested that for a long time, by the way. And it's all about the primaries for a few candidates who roll through. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney, America Tonight, coast to coast and all those nooks and crannies in between. You know what we say here, it doesn't matter about your stripes, left, right, or somewhere in between, even if you're confused, have an opinion, any opinion, it matters. And it's going to matter. It mattered in the primaries. It will matter when it comes to November 2nd, and the clock is ticking as we grow closer to Election Day. Keep these digits handy. Got a pen? Got a good memory? I'm going to give them to you right here at the get-go. 800-259-5791. 800-259-5791. Let's start with the primary. Senator John McCain won his Republican Senate primary in Arizona because it was a pretty bitter campaign, and McCain spent a lot of money. Just dipped into his own coffers, $22 million at the tail end of this, and it was the former U.S. Congressman J.D. Hayworth who turned into a talk show host for a big station in Phoenix, then went back into politics that almost knocked him off, but he didn't do it. So McCain wins. He hangs on. There were some other interesting races, too, especially in Florida. What happened in Florida, political novice, a nobody, Rick Scott, pushes past the veteran politico, Bill McCollum. He wins Florida's Republican gubernatorial primary. And Congressman Kendrick Meek prevailed in the state's Senate Democratic nomination over the upstart that was making a lot of noise on that side of things, Jeff Green. So it was strange. I was just in Florida, and it was everywhere I looked, there was signs. There was tons of signs for Rick Scott, and Rick Scott did it. Rick Scott was very active in opposing the health care legislation, and he poured $40 million of his own dough into getting the nod. And so he has it now, and he'll run, obviously continue to run until November 2nd, see what happens there in Florida. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, no stranger to opposition, was a little embarrassed, I think, when she went into the polling booth earlier in the day. Here's what she said.
I just cast my vote for Jan Brewer for governor. First time in my life.
All right. First time in her life she did that. She won the Republican primary. There are people that want to see Brewer go, but it's the people on the other side of the aisle. There's no doubt that she's curried a lot of favor with Republicans in that state. So she's headed to the general election, too, just like Rick Scott after handily winning her deal. It was a surge in her popularity, no doubt, after she signed that law targeting illegal immigration. Once that happened, she just shot up in the eyes of a lot of the Republicans certainly there. Remember, it was Brewer, because a lot of people forget this, who got the job last year, or inherited is a better way to say it, after the former governor, Janet Napolitano, became Homeland Security Secretary. So now she'll meet Democrat Terry Goddard in the November race, and Goddard was the Attorney General and was unopposed for the nomination. So interesting stuff. There's some other news and notes from the primaries, and we'll definitely jump to that as we cruise along here in this first hour of America Tonight. But a couple of other things to update you on as we move along this, I'll call it menu setting portion of the show. What also we're going to talk about is Shirley Sherrod, because Sherrod made news again, and no doubt she did when she decided, I'm not going to take this job. I don't need this job. It's not going to be like the job I had before, pretty much. I mean, she was actually pretty gracious about it, but said she had no interest in going back to a position where she couldn't do what she wanted to do. So she turned down the job offer after all that has happened since she left and was actually asked to pull over on the side of the road and hand over her resignation on a BlackBerry. So she got an apology after she was forced to resign from the Ag Department in July, and now she's declined an offer to serve as the deputy director of the Office of Advocacy and Outreach. It was a newly created position, wink, wink, designed to improve the department's, get this, civil rights efforts and image nationwide. But she said she was too uncertain about taking on that role. There was too many questions about the position, and she didn't, said she didn't feel like taking it and wouldn't exactly be where she should be at this point, I guess. And so she decided to say no to it. She turned down an offer to return to her previous position, too, as the department's director of rural development for Georgia. And she says, you know, when you look at everything that's happened over the last 5 weeks, it's pretty difficult to go back to that spot. And I feel like I could do more to address issues, not as a full-time employee of the USDA. She's writing a book. She's going on a speaking tour. So Sherrod met Tuesday with the Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack to talk about the offers. It was the first meeting they actually had face-to-face since the showdown last month that ended up in Sherrod stepping down. And she's not going to turn around. She could possibly be an advisor to be a consultant, perhaps, to address issues related to racism is what's being pumped out by the USDA. But she's definitely not going to return there. She said she needs to take a break from everything surrounding her dismissal. So, like I said, she's writing a book. She's going on tour. She's giving speeches. I guarantee somebody swooped in and said, you got a book here, at least can go and speak on this. There are other opportunities that you would be much better off taking, and probably that's part of it. The egg recall continues to worry some and tries the tempers, I think, of others who are trying to calm down the nation as to what we're looking for in this egg recall. The nation is scrambling to try to figure it all out and to figure out egg safety, too. I mean, are we safe from salmonella? People are starting to ask that question. How do you reduce your chances? Well, I can tell you one thing. I made the crack on a previous show about drinking the raw eggs. Remember that used to be the manly man thing to do when you were getting in shape? Or, I mean, I hate to say this, and it's probably going to make some of you sick to your stomach, but I'm a huge fan of steak tartare. That has an egg on it, has a raw egg on it. So about 500 million eggs still are recalled because of the outbreak, and it involves millions of eggs, but they represent less than 1% of the 8 billion eggs that are actually produced in this country every year. The Egg Safety Center says, look, that's 1%. Egg producer Hillendale Farms of Iowa recalled 170.4 million eggs. I know I've said the name before. They distributed to stores and companies and another company. And so you add that up all together, and that's where you get your 500 million and counting. And there are lists of places where you don't want to go get the eggs. And they're still trying to figure out what it was. Was it the laying hens that were infected by contact with human workers that weren't sanitary? Was it rodent feces? Still don't know at this point. We do know we're going to be back on the flip side for more odds and ends.
Nine years, thousands of clients worldwide, amazing results. And here's more proof of the effectiveness of how Heart and Body Extract supports good circulation and healthy arterial flow.
My name is Crystal. I'm a 45-year-old and live in Houston, Texas. I was diagnosed with having mitral valve prolapse 10 years ago. My cardiologist said surgery and drugs was the only thing he could offer me.
What did Crystal do?
I ordered Heart and Body Extract in August 2006. When I first took my first 15 drops, I embraced the formula. and could even feel the goodness of the formula starting to work.
Clean, clear arteries are happy arteries after using Heart and Body Extract. Learn more at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. HB Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Gold. If you listen to the radio, watch TV, or surf the net, you are hearing about gold. Eventually you will ask yourself, is gold right for me? The answer might surprise you. We protect ourselves and our families from many things. Do you have medical insurance? Is your home insured? Do you carry life insurance? How about financial insurance? If you own gold, then the answer is yes. If you don't own gold, the question is, why don't you have financial insurance? We put our faith in things we trust. Do you trust the dollar? Do you trust the economy? Do you trust the government? Gold has always been something you can trust. For thousands of years, people have put their faith in gold. Where will you put your faith? Now is the time to protect yourself and your family. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. And ask for Jim Parker. Let me help you get started today. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct, wholesale pricing.
Coming up in our next segment here on America Tonight, man, there's so much going on in the possible world of terrorism. I always say possible because I hold out hope that we're not going to see some of the crazy things that have unfolded in other parts of the world with the suicide bombers and every other day worrying whether or not there's a bomb underneath the bus that you're riding or one has been planted in the subway you happen to be on. But Hezbollah now emerging as a player in Mexico, also some of what's happening in Afghanistan, and more importantly, the push on Pakistan, plus what one of the Marine generals, the lead general, had to say about Afghanistan and the fact that it's absolutely looking like years that we're going to be dealing with Afghanistan at this point, because how can we back out after saying this is where we need to be, this is our, these are the things that we're doing? We're going to chat with Jeff Atticott, who I think is the premier guy when it comes to terrorism. He's our terrorism expert. When I say premier guy, because he really has a pulse on everything. He's talking to groups all over the world and all over the country, whether it's the FBI or the Air Force or whoever it happens to be, the CIA, etc. And he knows what's happening. He's been to Guantanamo a couple of times. So we'll get his take on some of the things that are going on right now, both in Afghanistan, the mosque in New York City, and what he thinks should happen there, and the imam, who now some more radical statements are coming out that he said in the past, and some of those other things as well. In the meantime, though, in odds and ends, it's an end. It's a sad end. A Chinese passenger jet, remember, broke apart as it approached a runway in the Northeast, and it burst into flames, hit the ground on Tuesday, killed 43 people, injured 53 others. Some Americans were believed to be on board that plane, and it looks like it was a fog-related thing, not officially, but it's looking more and more like that's probably what happened in this case. And like I said, sadly, the State Department is saying there are a handful of Americans who were supposed to be on the flight. So we'll give you the latest on what possibly caused that. But or preliminarily, it's the weather that led to that. Boy, we've seen a lot of crazy accidents lately with planes, a lot of them overseas, though, in Asia, in Europe. And two recently were weather-related, one in South America, weather-related. And it makes you think when you know, when you're demanding, I want this plane to get off the ground, and you kind of look around and you see some jiggy weather. I don't know, there might be, for me, more of a push to hang out in the airport lounge. Why do I need to get on the plane with this lightning going off around us and this pouring down rainstorm? And, oh, yeah, here comes that fog rolling in, huh? Well, in Chile, I think this has to be one of the best stories that we've heard when it comes to mines and mine accidents in a very long time. 33 miners trapped a half mile underground lived on things like a sip of milk, a bite of a cracker, maybe a tiny piece of a peach, a couple of spoonfuls of tuna every other day. They were being careful in what they were eating because the pack that they had, the supply, was just a two-day emergency supply. And who knew if and when they were going to get out. So finally, after 17 days, they were rescued. And I guess it was the discipline that, you have to say, saved their lives. Because it took them a long time to be able to dig a hole wide enough to get them out of where they were. And the first, you know, this was 2 days of food. They stretched into 2 weeks. So the first communications with the trapped miners, it was about talking to them through a fixed line with the rescuers above, and it shows that they had that spirit, that strength to be able to fight through, because that's a very long time. And plus, you're in complete darkness. I mean, they were absolutely plunged into the darkness in the beginning of August when, with the collapse of the main shaft, they were in a gold and silver mine, and it runs kind of like a corkscrew for about 4 miles or so, and it's under a mountain in northern Chile. They got contact with the outside world on Sunday when rescuers drilled that borehole down to the shelter after seven failed attempts. Man, that is unbelievable. They try to conserve the helmet lamps because that's the only source of light other than a handful of cars whose engines would contaminate the air supply. They fired up a bulldozer to carve into a natural water deposit. But, you know, otherwise that's what they did, anything that they could to try to save themselves. And, you know, you've got those, think of those rooms, how hot they would be. You can't see anything. And it would be stressful, no question about it. And the emergency supplies, finally, when they started to get them, that probably had to be massive relief. And then the LED light, so that they would have a light source, was probably a relief, too. But every single passing day, I'm sure the people on top of the ground were concerned. But I think it's a great story. A great story that they survived. That in one more week, the men will have been trapped underground longer than any miners in history. So you know what I'm saying? History of the mining industry. Last year, three miners survived 25 days trapped in a flooded mine in southern China. And few other rescues have taken more than 2 weeks. But, you know, you look at Chile, and it's the world's top copper producer. Also, they're a leading producer of gold, and they've got super, super, super advanced mining operations. So the fact that they've been able to hang on, the fact that they've got some fresh supplies is a good thing. And unfortunately, what happened, the ventilation shaft, or fortunately, was in good condition. I mean, the miners otherwise couldn't use it. And the route that they were going to take, though, was blocked. So good enough condition that some of the drafting they were getting was helpful, but not good enough for them to get in and around it. I'm also wondering how many people, raise your hands, because, of course, we have our special infrared glasses, have credit card debt. I've met very few people who just completely live on cash. They had problems with credit cards. They got rid of the credit cards. They paid them down. It's interesting. There was some info released today that says the amount consumers owed on their credit cards in this year's second quarter actually dropped to the lowest level in more than 8 years. So what's happening, because of the recession, people are paying off the balances. They're getting them down as fast as they can. And that's what they're seeing. It's probably why we're all getting credit card stuff in the mail. I'm getting a ton of it. I don't know about the rest of you. I call it credit card spam. They're offering you crazy rates or crazy limits or whatever it might be, even 0%, a couple of 0%. What's interesting in breaking down the numbers is the people in Alabama paid off the most debt. They dropped their average balances by 27% to $4,700 and change. And more borrowers are making their payments on time. Because, of course, nobody wants to pay the ridiculous freight that you have to pay when you miss a payment. So the $39, $40, whatever it is. And it's not a surprise here. The people who were worst as far as the credit card is concerned, is Nevada, Florida, Arizona, California. In all, 16 states fared worse than the national average for delinquencies. So some of the places that I mentioned, that's where they've been creamed by the housing industry, how it's flopped over on them. I think when you say California, that's not a shocker. And I don't think it's a shocker either when you say Florida, too, because of what's happened, especially when it comes to homes, but also the job situation, and you compound all of that, and that's no doubt what you get. All right, coming up on America Tonight, like I said, we're going to have a conversation with Jeff Atticott. Love this guy. All about what's going on in the world and how we could be safer and opening a lot of people's eyes to that. Then afterwards, we're going to talk about biking, little four-year health stuff. How to get those pounds off without spending the money for some fancy schmancy gym. You know what happens? You go for a couple of weeks, and then you're tired of it. You guys know what I mean. You're tired of the whole weight thing. You don't do the circuit anymore. Just get on a bike. Stay with us.
Work from home. Yeah, right.
Yes, the typical make money from home scam has become a cynical laugh in this country. But for only $5 a month, this home-based business is anything but typical. Finally, a business we can all afford, AtHomeRevolution.com. But you're thinking, how much can it be worth for only $5? And how much can you earn with that little investment? Here's the truth. 94% of all who joined AtHomeRevolution.com have stayed. 94%. With AtHomeRevolution.com, there's no stress, no talking to anyone,
unless you want to,
and no long-term contracts or commitments. Request free information at AtHomeRevolution.com. It's honest, easy, and true. AtHomeRevolution.com, the best home-based business in existence today for only $5 per month. Then a one-time $10 investment for advertising. One time. That's it. AtHomeRevolution.com. That's ATHomeRevolution.com. Say yes to residual income with AtHomeRevolution.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio.
You guys are awesome.
I love this station. I really do.
GCN.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This is George Whitehurst Berry. How surprised will you be when the stock market goes in a direction different from what many so-called experts in the mass media are predicting? Have you ever wondered when it might be a good time to sell as well as buy gold, oil, currencies, or financial instruments? Go to FrancisInsights.com. That's Francis with an E, Insights.com. Although past performance does not guarantee future results, Francis Insights has established an excellent track record forecasting probable major market swings. Francis Insights is educational, not advisory. So how much better off will you be with this powerful ally helping you make intelligent decisions not based on greed or fear? Go to FrancisInsights.com.
When you hear the words water purification, what comes to mind? If it's Berkey Water Purification Systems, this message is for you. Did you know that over 60% of municipal water contains fluoride at less than 2 cents per gallon? Berkey water filters purify treated and untreated water, remove dangerous chlorine, fluoride, and contaminants from municipal water. These filters are powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, making them perfect for rainwater collection systems. From the smallest to the largest systems, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has what you need. With your system purchase, you'll receive a shower filter, a fluoride filter, or 2 sport Berkey bottles absolutely free. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com would like to offer GCN listeners 5% off all ceramic filter systems and ship all orders over $50 free of charge. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY today.
Today, General James Conway, the head of the Marines boss, disagreed with the president's assessment that the troops will start to withdraw in Afghanistan in less than a year. And what he's saying is it's probably going to be a few at least before the Afghan security forces are ready. Who better to kick this around with than my favorite guy to talk about this kind of stuff with? He's so incredibly knowledgeable. Terrorism expert Jeff Atticott. Always a pleasure to welcome him to the show. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Doing good, Kate.
Big news today with General Conway, I guess because he disagrees. He disagrees with the president. He's talking about, whoa, these security forces, you know, they're nowhere near ready. And so it makes headlines, but I think it's interesting because it's always about this end game now. And where do you see our role going in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, the general, first of all, better be cautious because there goes another general fired for disagreeing with the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Look, this pains me to say this because I'm a 20-year veteran and nobody wants to talk ill of our policies right in the middle of a war. But, you know, it's becoming very evident that this president has no idea what he's doing on a variety of fronts. And this surplus surge in Afghanistan is no exception. We're going to have 100,000 coalition troops on the ground by the end of this month. And the president has not defined what victory is. What are they doing there? At the same time, he has simultaneously announced we're going to start a withdrawal within a year. I can't imagine anybody that is even a half student of history realizing that in a war situation, you don't tell the enemy, you know, that you're going to start withdrawing. And then you don't tell your own forces exactly what victory looks like. The stakes are very high now. He has raised the stakes to the point where we cannot slip out the back door because the narrative is going to be that we drove you out of Afghanistan, and that would be devastating to this nation and to the world because that's their narrative, that we drove you out, that will swell the ranks of the Al-Qaeda and radical Islam by a thousandfold. So by raising the stakes, by doing this gigantic surge, we have to emerge victorious. We have to win. We won in Iraq. It took a long time, but no one can say that we were driven out of Iraq. But how do you define victory, Mr. President, in Afghanistan? It's, you know, we can keep the lid on. We can take and hold ground, and that's essentially what the president said we're going to do, if I can figure it out. We're going to take and hold ground. Yeah, our military can take and hold ground any place on this planet as long as we're there. But when we leave, does anybody really seriously believe that the Taliban will not come roaring back and reassert itself as never before?
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, one of the things that we see this what's happening with the WikiLeaks deal is WikiLeaks is getting ready to release more Afghanistan documents, right? So you've been following this, Jeff. The Pentagon says the new documents are even more damaging, and it risks the troops' lives. And here we are. This rolls into Afghanistan. What's at stake with what's going on with the documents that are being released and some of the names that were reported earlier?
Well, it's a propaganda war as well as putting steel on target. And we are not, we've never done a good job with the propaganda aspect in the Bush administration or in the Obama administration. We allow people to paint us as baby killers and torturing people at Abu Ghraib and et cetera, et cetera. But that's probably something that comes with the territory. So we have to understand that our enemies are going to try to use propaganda against us. It doesn't help when you have folks in the West that are willing to, you know, sell their soul for a mess of pottage and put this nonsense out here, because what they want to do is to draw this false narrative that we kill civilians, that that's our main thing, that we target and kill civilians. In fact, exactly the opposite is true. We are the most humane military when it comes to warfighting than any military in the history of warfighting. But we have to take the gloves off. Again, we have to go back to defining victory, to having it spelled out. What does victory look like? And then, you know, leave once we achieve victory. And until you identify the center of gravity in this war, you can't do that. And I'll tell the, you know, basically I'll tell you where the center of gravity is. It's not in Pakistan. Excuse me. It's not in Afghanistan. It's in Western Pakistan. That's where Al-Qaeda has reconstituted. We need to direct and focus all of our efforts into Western Pakistan. Take the 100,000 coalition soldiers, go in there mountain to mountain and flush them out, kill them, kill them, kill them. And then we can emerge victorious and get out of Afghanistan as quickly as possible and let that wonderful organization called the United Nations worry about rebuilding or building, because there's really nothing there to rebuild the infrastructure of Afghanistan.
Yeah. You know, talking about Pakistan, you and I have discussed that before, how the target was initially really missed and Pakistan should have been where we went in the first place. But now you've got the floods and you've got 800,000 at least or more that have been cut off by these floodwaters. That has to be damaging, too, because you have more desperate people. So that's easy pickings, isn't it, for the Taliban?
Yeah, it's a recruiting tool for the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda and other radical Islamic groups, because they will use this as a leverage point to say that the government in Pakistan is incompetent, they can't protect you, will protect you. It's a great opportunity for us to go in and do humanitarian activities, but in the long term, this is a war. And in war, you know, unfortunately, if you're going to win a war, you've got to, again, identify the center of gravity, come close quarters with the enemy, destroy the enemy, and then depart. And that's what we need to do. If we're going to get out of Afghanistan, we've got to depart with victory under our wings. The current policy is, nobody knows what the current policy is. The president has fired McKiernan, he's fired McChrystal, he's so desperate, he's gone to a Bush general, Petraeus, who's a great guy, but, you know, this is not an insurgency operation. That's his expertise. We know where the enemy is. We go in there and crush the enemy. That's all they understand. That's all that these folks understand, is the application of a lot of lawful violence.
This isn't something certainly new, but something we've talked about also before, the dangers of not knowing who's coming across the border closer to home, and that includes Hezbollah. Now there's a lot of reports that their presence has been increased. How worried should we be about terrorists using this as a kind of a staging ground for maybe a terrorist attack?
You know, terrorists are not dumb. To the degree that they know what works. And it's surprising to many commentators that and people that follow the trends that we haven't had the type of suicide bombings that occur in other parts of the country here in the United States. We've had great success at breaking up a lot of sleeper cells and a lot of these radical Islamic extremists before they are able to attack. You know, we could have had some devastating attacks at Fort Dix, the Lackawanna Six in Florida, in different places, but, you know, we have we've been graced out, and we have a lot of law enforcement done a lot of work at you know, keeping us safe. But it's simply a matter of time. The problems on the Mexican border are only getting worse. We're not securing our border with Mexico. It's politics as usual, and it makes average Americans bilious to see our government actually suing, you know, states like Arizona that dare stand up and try to defend themselves against this gigantic issue of illegals streaming across the border, drugs, violence, crime. You know, the first obligation of any national entity is to secure its borders, protect its people.
No kidding. Last one, Jeff. The Cordova Initiative, what's going on in New York with the Islamic Center a couple of blocks from Ground Zero where the towers fell, and we're seeing rallies now and politicians on both sides of this and the imams, whites speaking out, and the developers and the construction workers. Your thoughts on that being built there?
Yeah, absolutely outrageous. If the folks that want to build this mosque there are trying to bring us together, I've never seen more division in the last 2 or 3 years on any issue. So they're not bringing people together. The amount of insensitivity of those that want to put that mosque, to me, is mind-boggling. They are using their freedoms, and certainly you have the freedom of religion in this country, but you're using your freedom to destroy freedom. It is not appropriate to build that mosque at that location or anywhere near that location where 3,000 people were murdered in the name of Islam. That's a fact. So therefore, if you are a moderate Islamic adherent, then you would have enough common sense to put the mosque somewhere else, and because it's a propaganda tool for our enemies. Again, this war on terror is about propaganda, and you know that when the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Hamas have all spoken out in support of putting this mosque there, well, you know, I'm not on their side. If they're for it, I'm against it, because they will use that as a rallying cry again to recruit more radicals. So if you really believe in healing, if you believe in your country, put the mosque somewhere else.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. Do you think it'll end up there? I think it's going to get moved. I think the developers will pull the money. Some of the people that are pumping the money into it might pull out, and that'll change it.
Yeah, I think the way to stop this is to find out where the money's coming from, because we have strict federal laws about funding terrorists. And where, you know, if the money comes from terrorist organizations, then we can certainly dry up those fund sites real quick. But just look at the background of the imam, quote unquote, that, you know, what wants to put this there. He called it initially the 9/11 the Ground Zero mosque. So his intent is really clear. He won't denounce Hamas. He wants, you know, to destroy our Anglo-Saxon law and replace it with Sharia law, if I read him correctly, and I think I do.
Right.
You know, he is simply a hypocrite, and we need to flush him out. I'm glad that the news media is finally releasing some of his outrageous statements that he makes in Arabic, or he, you know, then the statements he makes in English are much more moderate, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's the best thing. I agree with you. I think that's the best thing that happened when he went on that taxpayer tour, I'll call it. And then, of course, what the White House said as well, you know, it's private and there's nothing going on here as far as fundraising or whatever. But once we started to see some previous things that the imam said, I think you're right, Jeff, and you got a better sense of what this guy was about.
This White House is on the wrong side of history on almost every single issue, and you know, it's almost beyond my imagination that they are willing to really have such a schizophrenic policy in terms of fighting radical Islam and protecting this nation on our borders.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on ATN.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
For world-class auto detailing, use what the pros use worldwide. Sparkle Auto. At SparkleAuto.com, the products and services we deliver are as good as it gets. And the knowledge behind them, even better. We always give you our absolute best, like our large 5-foot square chamois. It's Sparkle Auto's hottest selling item, voted by our customers as the most valuable chamois. This imported chamois is made of the highest quality microfiber artificial leather, so no scratching ever. It always remains soft, gentle, and pliable, no matter how much water it's soaks up. The Sparkle Auto chamois will not shrink or grow stiff with age or dryness. See it and buy it now for only $19.95 plus shipping at SparkleAuto.com. That's SparkleAuto.com or call toll-free 866-372-9559. Experience the best customer service and our 110% price guarantee at SparkleAuto.com. Call 866-372-9559 today for good value on top of the line auto detailing products from SparkleAuto.com.
If you're a regular listener of this station, then disaster survival is vitally important to you and your family. Long-term food storage, water filtration, emergency food preparation, and quality survival products are not just talk topics, but a way of life. We strongly believe in being prepared for any emergency. We are foodandwaterstore.com, owned and operated by people who are into emergency preparedness. And because we are preppers like you, we own and use the products we offer. You'll find quality name brand proven products like Global Sun Ovens, Wonder Mill Flour Mills, Mountain House Foods, Satchel and Berkey water filters, and many more, plus videos and articles at foodandwaterstore.com. 90% of our customers are return customers because of our low prices and excellent customer service. We still believe the customer is always right. Discover what your family needs to weather any storm at foodandwaterstore.com or call 1-877-773-7123. Foodandwaterstore.com, helping you prepare for the storms of life.
Got my bike out of mothballs, and I decided I needed a cruiser besides the 18 speeds that I wasn't really great at using anyway. Some of you can relate to this. You know, summertime, spring, great time to ride bikes, all that other sort of stuff. And if I hadn't have clicked my wing, I probably would have been riding for months. But now I'm ready to jump back on the bike and tackle some of those long courses and even the short courses. And I'm wondering how many people are doing the same thing and replacing this with going to the gym. The gym gets so boring, the treadmill. I can only do it for so long, and then I can't do it any longer. So perfect person to have on this show, Celine Yeager. She's written a book called Ride Your Way Lean. She also does a column for Bicycling Magazine, so I'm sure she can unlock some of those secrets for us. Celine, thanks for popping on America Tonight. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
So Ride Your Way Lean. How'd you come up with that title? I mean, I guess it's obvious. It's about getting in shape, right?
It is, but you know, you was the perfect intro for it. It's, you know, I've been a trainer for about 20 years, and so many people that I have run into over the course of that time, they, you know, they have some extra weight, they want to get in shape, and what's the first thing they do? They like plop down a bunch of money and join a gym. Or they decide, I need to start running, and they get on the treadmill, and that lasts. It doesn't last 3 months. Sometimes it doesn't last 3 days because running is very unforgiving on most people. And the gym is just dreadful. And then I would start getting people on bikes and going outside, and they would say things like, are we already done? Do we have to stop? You know, and I've seen clients lose triple digits just because they're having fun, you know? So it seemed like a little light bulb moment. Like, why not promote this? It's something that, you know, like you were talking about earlier, riding, there's so many paths now and so many places to ride, and it's so freeing, you know? Take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're saying you've seen people lose like triple digits. Wow. So is there?
There are stories in the book, numerous stories of people who lost another person, who lost more than 100 pounds.
Wow. And did they start off, you know, just by maybe going a couple of miles, getting into it, and then they got really pumped and excited about it and started to ride more or rode every day? How did they do it?
Definitely. I mean, some of them, it's interesting. I mean, most of them, if you can, that's one of the nice things about biking, honestly. Like, if you can walk down the block, you can ride your bike a mile or so. You know, it's pretty unforgiving.
Sure.
It's gentle on the joints. And, you know, a lot of them were very frank. They could only ride, you know, around their neighborhood, but they liked how it felt. So then they would try to go a little longer. And at some point it becomes a bit of a game, and then you get fit fairly fast. And before you know it, you're going further than you thought you could and challenge yourself to do other things. And it's when you start doing that, it becomes something that you look forward to and something that you're doing continuously. And that's, talk to any weight loss expert, that's how you lose weight.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
That's the ticket.
Yeah, no kidding. And I know a lot of guys out there, you get the beer gut and it's football season and everybody has a million excuses. Now, what kind of bike should you get though? Because I've mentioned that I had this 18 speed crazy bike and it kind of kept me from riding. It was a boy's bike too that was given
to
me.
That's interesting. So you ended up getting, like, is it a more upright bike? Is it a?
It's a more upright bike,
kind of bike,
exactly. It's more upright, so I feel like I can ride it further. I don't know why, but it's just more comfortable. That's what it is. It's more comfortable than the other one.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, and I talk about that a lot in the book. There's a whole section on, like, choosing the right bike for you. I mean, you go into a shop, and it can be very easy to buy the wrong thing or be a little overwhelmed by what you're seeing, so so it's a good idea to think about, like, where do you want to ride? Is it on paths like that? Most people don't want to race, so they don't need those aggressive, curvy handlebars with the drops, you know, and everything. Like, you can get a bike that's a little more upright and a little more comfortable that sits you back. You can see, you can look around, scan traffic. So definitely, I mean, think about where you're going to be riding it.
All right,
as long as you are comfortable.
Yeah, the other thing is, as you say, any bike will do, picking up on that. I go into the bike shop, and of course I'm novice when it comes to bike gear. I know some stuff about biking, but I go in, and the first bike I see I love, it's a bamboo bike, and I ask the guy, how much is this bike?
$7,000. $10,000, and you're like, really?
It's pretty, but I didn't want to spend that much money. So
a panda bear could eat it. Yeah.
And the idea is that really you don't have to spend a lot of money on the bike.
No.
That's what I found out.
No, you can, obviously, as you saw. You can spend $10,000, but you can also spend $400 or $500 and get a bike you're going to love, you know, truly. And a lot of people will do that. They'll go in and they'll, you know, I mean, it's a good idea to spend a little more to get a bike that's not a tank. I mean, once you start getting into the very low hundreds, the bikes get a little heavy and clunky and maybe don't ride so well, so that could be discouraging. But spending just a little more, and it's still less than a gym membership, is well worth it, because then you get a machine that rides really nicely and, you know, gives you a pleasurable experience.
Do you find that a lot of people are biking? I know certainly there are areas where biking is huge, Portland, Seattle, even parts of the East Coast. I mean, it depends on the city, how bike-friendly the city is. There's paths in every place, I guarantee you, but depends on how many of them hook up. But do you find that a lot of people are doing the biking to work thing? Are more people kind of taking this up as an idea of, hey, this is how I can get my exercise?
You know, more people, especially since we're sort of in this economic slump, I mean, more people are starting to do that. They're taking advantage of easy ways to get exercise and honestly very economical ways to get exercise. And it's an interesting phenomenon, Kate, because like New York City just added 80 or 90 new miles of lanes, and they have over 420 miles of bike lanes now. It's almost faster. Actually, it is faster in many parts of the city to get where you're going on bike than to sit in that gridlock of traffic. And it's way more fun and better for you, too. So, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about Dallas. That used to be a fairly unfriendly place to ride, but
sure.
And Boston as well. More cities are becoming aware of it and are catering to people – and trying, let's face it, we have a huge obesity epidemic in this country, and companies and cities are getting tax breaks to make themselves more bike-friendly so people can get out there and lose some weight on their bikes.
Yeah, no kidding. Biking in general, is biking in general on an uptake, or is there a bigger interest in biking at all levels? Because, you know, we were talking about this, whether someone's just doing it for fun, maybe a little bit of exercise, or someone's hardcore. Because right near me, for example, I know a lot of them must be professionals. There must be 100 people that meet on Tuesday. They go to a Starbucks parking lot. I call it the Peloton. It's kind of a little joke. But everybody, and there's women that do too, and they all have outfits. And because it's a bike-friendly area, they're doing this every Tuesday. And like I said, there's probably 100 of them. They're very serious riders. You can tell they're in great shape. And they've done it for a while. And it made me think, in seeing them, that, wow, I wonder if this is becoming popular again. Are more people interested in biking?
Yes. I mean, that's an easy answer. I mean, Lance Armstrong, frankly, had something to do with that. He has helped our sport tremendously. But that phenomenon has taken off. I mean, in our little town of Emmaus, Pennsylvania, you can see on any given lunch hour, there are lunch rides where people meet and convene during the workday. You know, there could be 30 riders out just taking their lunch hour and doing a nice 15-mile spin. And what a great way to take a break from your day and to clear your head. I think the number has increased in the past maybe 5 years by about 36%. I mean, there's been a lot of growth in cycling. And like I said, some of it's just the awareness, like Lance Armstrong, and this has inspired a bunch of people. But once it takes foot somewhere, it becomes pretty infectious.
Yeah, no kidding. I've wondered this too. You know, you obviously are a writer for Bicycling Magazine. You got a blog, bicycling.com, and now you've got this book out. And so you're part of the club for sure. Can you be a part of Bicycling Magazine and not? Does everybody talk about their bikes? Are you talking about your gear when you huddled around and brainstorming and stuff?
You know, most people do, and those who don't find it's a little insufferable, honestly, because, you know, most people on staff do ride, and we, hate to be so stereotypical, but the guys do tend to talk more gear techie stuff than the girls do for the most part, but people, you know, we all love to look at great bikes and to talk about cycling and all those. That's one of the great things about it. Like, I don't remember the last vacation I took where I didn't ride a bike, because it's just such a great place to see, you know, great way to see any place. You see things you'd never see in a car, ever.
Yeah. Oh, boy, I agree with that. Do you remember your first bike?
Oh, I do. I do. It was the Aquamarine Schwinn. It was beautiful. It was my mother's old 3-speed. And she gave it to me, and I loved it. I think I named it something dramatic like Andromeda or something crazy, but I that was my first love.
Hey, listen, I remember I was in Queens, and I got a red Schwinn and had one of those banana seats.
Yep.
And I had baseball cards in the spokes because I loved the way they sounded when we went up and down the blocks. And forever and a day, I just wanted to always keep the bicycle cards in there, but I had so much fun. I can remember that, you know, kicking it around the neighborhood. Yeah, exactly. And I am doing it. I hope a lot of people listening will take this up and forget the pumping the weights. Get out there and go see the sights and get on
definitely.
The bike. And it you definitely reduce, I think, the excuses. So ride your way lean. Selena Yeager, thanks so much for coming on with us. If somebody wants to pick up the book, where can they get it?
Amazon.com, of course, any bookstores, or they can go to bicycling.com and check out my blog, which is The Fit Chick, and buy it directly through that.
Perfect. Thanks. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's been fun.